Well, we saw one scrimmage and we didn't see another. One thing's for certain. You better have your starting quarterback ready to go, or it could be troublesome. Plus, the Dome Patrol is all back together again in one place. And we'll talk to the latest member inducted into the Greater New Orleans Sports Hall of Fame. All these stories, plus the Raging Cajun Report, and more today, Monday, August 12th, 2019.
Swung on and ripped to right field. That is a base hit. Going to the right field wall. In fact, it goes over the right field wall. What a high bounce. A grounds rule double for Gardner. A ribby double. Urshela scores, and the Yankees take a 1-0 lead.
Swinging a high fly ball. Deep right field. This is going to go. Rio Ruiz hits a walk-off home run out of the flag court, and the Orioles win 8-7.
Two. There's a fly ball. Left field. At the wall. LeCastro looks up, and it's gone. Turner's second home run of the day. His 19th of the year. The 30th surrendered by Leak, and the Dodgers lead 7-0.
And a great afternoon to each and every one of you. Thanks so much for dialing us up here. KLWB 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com. On the campus of Delta Media, he's sitting inside a rectangular box with all kinds of buttons in front of them, screens in front of them. It's the master control suite in the 237 Roof Studios. That's my main man, Clint Domain. It is hotter than hot. I can't imagine football players, full pads out there with heat indexes tipping over 100 degrees, sometimes as high as 106. Holy cow. Here's what you need to know about baseball. You heard the clips from over the weekend. The Yankees lead the Rays by 8.5 in the AL East with 77 wins. The Central is a dead even heat between the Twins and the Indians. The Indians coming on strong, winning 8 of their last 10. They're now both 71 wins, 47 losses. And in the AL West, the Astros with a commanding 10-game margin over the A's. They, too, have won 8 of their last 10. In the National League, the Braves are up 6.5 over the Nationals, 8 over the hard-charging Mets, who've made a run in the NL East. In the NL Central, the Cubbies are with a 2-game lead over my Cardinals. Cardinals are faltering, winning only 4 of their last 10. The Brewers are 2.5 games back, and in the NL West, it's just an absolute ridiculous blitzkrieg as the Dodgers are leading the Diamondbacks by 19 games. But anyway, we digress because this is all about football. And we saw the Saints get a chance to play on Friday night with many of their key players not playing. And we got a chance to hear, not see, but hear about the LSU football scrimmage. We'll get involved in all of these. Our guest list today, Tyler Nunez, at around 2:30, will join us as we talk LSU football. They're back on the practice field again today. We will talk with Bob Rose in hour number 2 about the Saints. Sean Payton says they finally hit a wall in practice. They'll take tomorrow off, and then Wednesday they'll head out to the West Coast to have their joint practices with the Chargers prior to preseason game number 2. The big news involves the LSU Tigers, and We've got some sound we're going to play for you. The biggest thing is that Joe Burrow did not play again. And because of that, you kind of wonder, okay, this was Miles Brennan's opportunity to get some meaningful reps because he's going to be what LSU believes will be the quarterback of the future after this year. Here's from the horse's mouth, from Coach Orgeron, after the scrimmage or the preseason game number one, he talked about Joe Burrow and how they're just not the same without him.
Never wants your starting quarterback to get hurt, but I thought it was a perfect scenario if it was going to happen this week. Give him time to get better and come back next week to see the guys step up. Miles had to step up. Peter had to step up. Put him in Tiger Stadium in a scrimmage, get them game ready. So I think it developed depth. We're not the same team without Joe in there. We're not there yet. The offense has been having a tremendous week with Joe in there. Without Joe, they're not the same.
So here's reading between the lines. Got to keep Burrow healthy. Got to get him ready to go. That means there's a big drop-off between Burrow and the number two quarterback, Miles Brennan, and there's an even huger gap between number two, Brennan, and number three, Peter Parrish. Got to keep him healthy. Here's Coach O talking about Miles Brennan. I froze up a little bit. It always happens when I do that, but we'll get it back. And look, in other words, this is critical, and I just wonder, what did they say they were going to do this year that they didn't do a year ago? That was to let Joe Burrow run the football. Well, let's get the evaluation of what Coach O saw in his backup quarterback.
You know, walked up there with some confidence. Started off, I think he was under a lot of pressure, a lot of duress. But he came back with two tremendous drives, made some great throws. Still has a ways to go, but I think he's much improved over last year.
Still has a ways to go, but he's much improved. Well, we didn't get to see him at all a year ago. He was hurt, so we're just going to take his word for that. But he still has a ways to go. Team's not the same. It is Joe Burrow's team, no question about it. One thing on a positive note that Coach I liked, he thought his defensive line looked very good.
I thought the defensive line did very well today. There was a lot of guys out on a lot of offensive line of scrimmage that were not playing, especially on the second team. A couple of guys were hurt, so there's some guys that normally don't play on the second team. I thought the defensive line had a dominant day. Brandon Fajoco, Tyler Shelvin. I thought Ray Thornton had a good day. I think he had about Ray Thornton had three tackles. I think we had five sacks on the defensive line. So, overall, I thought they played very well.
Defensive line played well. Two freshmen that could possibly be starters, one for sure, one that may but will certainly play, is Apu Aika and Derek Stingley. And, Coach O, look, this is something that it took place in the spring. It took place over the summer, and it's now taking place in fall camp. He has praised both of them. Well, don't take my word for it. Listen.
Yeah, they look like veterans. I mean, it's hard to consider them freshmen. They've had such good camps. Sting had a great return today, had some good tackles. I think he had two picks, and Apu had a bunch of tackles up front. He and Tyler had a good day today, so those guys are going to play a lot. Sting may start, and Apu may start, Tyler may start. But they look like vets out there.
They look like vets out there. So, look, the return game's going to be better already. Stingley had two picks in the scrimmage. He's just a ball player. So he's been inked into the starting lineup from the get-go. So, and Aika, look, here's a guy that is big. You don't want him losing too much weight because he's a space eater. You know, they want that guy like Mount Cody back in the day for Alabama that I think he only had 6-7 tackles in the season, but he just took away all the blockers. He just manned up, filled in the gaps, and let everybody else make the plays. But without him, they weren't nearly as effective. So that's good. Look, there, it was full scale. So you had the brain trust on the offensive side with Steve Ensminger and Joe Brady going up on the defensive side against the defensive professor. Coach O talked about the competition that ensued.
It was game time, 6 o'clock in the morning in there, man. There were some game faces going, and that's just the way it is. And they had a good time. It was a good day. Steve and Joe in the press box, so it was a good chance to get the plays called in, sideline adjustments, what we have to do, and who needs to get on the headset. We were a little bit rusty. There are times where we went over the 25-second play clock, but that's expected on the first game. But we'll be better next week.
All right. It's all about timing and tempo. But in a nutshell, the defense won the day because Burrow wasn't there. And finally, Coach O talked about what I think is the best, it might be the best defense that Dave Aranda's had since he's been here and how they've stepped up.
I'm glad the defense came along today because all week the offense has been moving the ball on, so there was concerns there. So the defense had the upper hand today. Again, that we didn't have Joe in there, but I think that we'll balanced up the camp.
Balanced up the camp. Offense wins one day, defense wins another day. Look, the main thing is precaution. You can't get these guys hurt. You know, you've got starting the top running back in the country from Alabama is going to miss the entire season. The Texas Longhorns got a couple of people banged up at the running back position to the point where if it goes much longer, Tom Herman's going to have to take like a wide receiver and make him a running back. So you got to keep your main cogs healthy, plain and simple, plain and simple. So we'll hear more on the Tigers. When we come back, we'll hear from Sean Payton and some of the Saints after their preseason game number one. Nothing to write home about, nothing exciting, nothing, you know, just a preseason game. Look, the veterans just want to get through it. They don't care about it. And the young players are trying to make a name for themselves, and that's all it's all about. That's all it is. So we'll hear from the Saints when we return. It's the Monday edition of the Jordy Helfrich Show here on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com.
All the best guests join the Jordy Helfrich Show. If you missed an interview, you can check it out on demand at 103.7thegame.com. Now, back to the show.
All right, welcome back. 18 minutes after that, I know we'll get to the Saints and much more football. We'll get to the Raging Cajuns as well. But the NBA and the New Orleans Pelicans announced their 2019-2020 regular season schedule. The Pelicans will tip off the regular season on a Tuesday night, October 22nd, against the defending NBA champion Toronto Raptors at Scotiabank Arena in Canada. New Orleans will host its regular season home opener against the Dallas Mavericks on a Friday night, October 25th, at the Smoothie King Center. You think that place is going to be packed? Now, this is just what one player can do. Now, I remember they lost Anthony Davis, regarded by many as some as a top five, certainly a top 10 player in the entire world of basketball. They get Zion Williamson. Okay? They get a couple of Laker castoffs. And the Pelicans now are going to be featured on national television a franchise record 30 times. 30. They have never been anywhere remotely close to that. Between TNT, ESPN, ABC, the Pels are all over the place. All over the place. It's the first regular season appearance on ABC for New Orleans since April 12, 2009. NBA TV scheduled to broadcast 10 Pelican contests. So it's just, it's amazing. Now, 17 of the Pelicans' 41 games at home will be played on a Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. That's awesome. That's awesome. So, wow. Amazing. I had no idea. It's just, it's Zion. Everybody wants to see this guy, the number one pick in the draft. They never had this kind of coverage when they picked Anthony Davis number one. They never had this kind of coverage when they picked Chris Paul number four overall. 30 times on national television. Holy schmoly. That is absolutely amazing. Trying to compete, trying to match up with the Saints. And again, the Saints preseason opener, no Drew Brees, none of that. The Saints went back to work on Sunday. They had practice again today, and Sean Payton said, man, it always happens. We finally hit that wall.
I think so. You know, you try to as a coach. The key is the correction then, right mid-stride when all of a sudden, you know, whether things are going well for your side of the ball or the other side, you know, finding a way to respond and, you know, and fighting through it. So I thought it got better towards the end there.
Fight through it. The heat, the fatigue, it's a long camp. It's a long – just stay healthy. Eric McCoy, the first pick by the Saints, the center – he evaluated his performance after seeing the film, and here's what he thought of his first time in the NFL.
Yeah, well, first off, it was a great experience. You know, getting out there with the vets, the rest of the other guys, I really enjoyed myself. The competition was stiff, but I thought I had a decent game. Of course, there's things that I can improve on always, especially technique-wise, but that's what I'm out here for. So.
All right, so he's out there. Cam Jordan didn't play, but he got a look-see at his team. And he talked about last Friday versus the Vikings in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome.
You know, we got some things we have to finish on rushes. I mean, I'm always going to put it on the front D-line. When you don't generate enough pass rush, I'd say it's concerning, but at the same time, that's why you have a preseason game. It's tune everything up. There's a lot of quick throws. I mean, it was first reads. And, you know, you throw that in live bullet, you may be able to do something about it. When you talk about just the progression of a preseason, you see some things you want to see more of. So always put it on D-line, always put it on we want to make our pass rush perfect so we get in the game. It's going to be, when we get to live season anyways, real season, it's going to be exactly where we need to be.
One of the more disappointing notes during the game, I was really watching Marcus Davenport to see what he could do, and he didn't do hardly anything as far as I could see. But his teammate Cam Jordan summed up Marcus Davenport after preseason game number one.
He's got a lot of things that he wants to do mentally. And it's all, I'm trying to tell him, sometimes it's not about thinking so much. It's about just going out there physically performing. You've done enough reps to where your body knows what it needs to do, trust it. His problem is he thinks a lot. Sometimes you've got to shut that switch off or know when to shut it off.
Yeah, don't think. There's the ball. Go get it. Go tackle it. There's the quarterback. Go get him. It's nice to see after he didn't play in preseason game number one, the guy who was all the rave during the first week of training camp, Emmanuel Butler. Here's what he said about his health yesterday.
I'm back to 100%. You know, it feels great. God is amazing. You know what I mean? To be out here, to be able to play the game that I love and compete every day, it's truly a blessing. So I'm very thankful to be back out on the field.
He's trying to earn a spot on the team. So, again, the Saints had practice today. They'll be off tomorrow. They travel to the West Coast on Wednesday, and they'll be there for a few days. And those joint practices will be very, very important. You got to get your guys healthy. You got to get them ready to go. No question about that. So, all in all, it was a typical preseason game. If you're expecting great things, not going to happen. If you're expecting to see the best of the best, it's not going to happen. It's just a necessary evil. That's what it is. Just got to get through it and get on to the regular season where you got your 53-man roster, you know who you're going to battle with, and you're going to play your best players. I thought Teddy Bridgewater was pretty good. It was okay. But much like Ed O said about Joe Burrow, you can tell, you know, that the Saints are a much better club with Drew Brees there. He's a Hall of Famer. Okay? He's one of the greatest quarterbacks ever. So he's just going to make you better across the board. Your confidence level as a teammate goes up and up and up and through the roof. I'm not concerned about the Saints' defense. I think they're going to be okay. I think that they don't have to be great. They don't have to be top two or three or four in the league. I think they'll be fine. Just got to get, as Cam Jordan said, just got to stop thinking so much and just go play the game. Play the game. Let your skill set take care of it. So, in a nutshell, I'm not worried about Breeze. I'm worried about Brennan a little bit. I mean, excuse me, I'm worried about Burrow a little bit. He expects to get him back sometime this week. Expects to get him back. I don't know what the injury is. I have no clue. Next Saturday is the biggest scrimmage of them all for LSU, and then they start to taper down. That's when you start to game plan for your opponent. And unlike Les Miles, Ed Orgeron learned you got to let them get their legs back. You got to let them be fresh for when the games start. You can't kill them and wear them down in practice. You just can't. So if Burrow misses scrimmage number two, now there's concern. Because you got to get on the same page. Timing is everything. Communication is everything. So we'll see. Hopefully he'll be back. Hopefully Christian Fulton, Grant Delpit, and all those guys will be back. They don't need to hit right now. They just need to be ready for August 31st. Plain and simple. Tyler Nunez of Tiger Rag will join us here in just a moment. We're brought to you by Hooters. Hooters on Ambassador Caffrey Parkway. Fantasy football leagues. Make your reservation now. Not a better place to go and get your draft going than at Hooters. Renovated, brand spanking new. It just is going to make you happy at Hooters. We're back. More LSU talk here. Monday edition, Jordy Helfrich Show, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com.
There's only one place you'll find all the movers, shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
All right, let's get back to the topic of LSU football. Tyler Nunez of Tiger Rag, kind enough to join us to get his thoughts. He listened to Coach O after the scrimmage, talk to the media. He can read between the lines of certain things. And Tyler joins us now. Hey, buddy, thanks for the time. How are you, my friend?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, Jordy?
I'm doing terrific. So what was your biggest takeaway after listening to Coach O after Saturday's first preseason game, as he likes to call it?
Yeah, well, the first is that they apparently didn't get a good look at the offense, considering Joe Burrow was out with injury. So Miles Brennan and Peter Parrish kind of had to pick up the slack, and it led to what Ed Orgeron called a dominant day for the defense. So obviously probably not what they wanted. That said, they were, Joe Brady and Zminger were able to work in the box for the first time together in a game a simulation and stuff like that. So it wasn't completely useless, but apparently it was a rough day for the offense, and I don't think they got exactly what they were planning on out of that first scrimmage.
I wonder if the coaches went back to their offices and met as a group and said, look, I know we've been talking about this RPO and letting Joe Burrow run the football more, but can they afford to let him run the football more? Because if he gets hurt, apparently there is a wide gap between he and Miles Brennan, and even wider gap between Brennan and Peter Parrish.
Yeah, from what I understand, Peter Parrish is unplayable at this point. He's just not ready yet. Obviously, that's not unusual for a freshman entering the SEC, but it's still something to keep an eye on. Hopefully, they don't have to get to that point, but it's something to take note of. And then Miles Brennan, yeah, you're right, apparently did not perform the way they wanted him to. You expect a gap between your one and two, but the big story of the offseason has been, hey, we're going to let Joe Burrow run because they have someone behind him now that can kind of sling it. And apparently that didn't show up. That's not what happened on Saturday. So you're right. It's something that they should probably take a look at. That said, I think they want to let Joe Burrow play the game he wants to play, and Joe Burrow allegedly likes to hit. So I guess we'll see what they do with it. But yeah, it's definitely something to keep an eye on.
I believe that this offense is tailor-made for what Joe Burrow does. I think it's just the opposite of what Miles Brennan does well. Mm-hmm. Miles Brennan's in a shotgun in high school, and he just wants to throw it. He doesn't want to run it. So maybe you see where I'm coming from?
Yeah, and you would think that this new offensive style would kind of fit Miles Brennan in that way because it is it's a spread. They're going to play run a lot out of the shotgun, no huddle. You'd think that would lead to it, but I think a lot of it is timing and chemistry with wide receivers that he just doesn't have yet. I guess they got to let him throw the ball a little bit more with guys like Terrace Marshall, Justin Jefferson, and Ja'Marr Chase, kind of get him comfortable because if he has to come in, he's going to have to be somewhat productive, and they can't just rely on their running backs the way they're going to run this new offense.
That's why he's got to play in some of these early games if LSU is up and up comfortably. We'll see. Tyler Nunez of Tiger Red, kind enough to join us. I'm wondering, what did you get with such a defensive dominating day, according to Coach O? What does that tell us about the offensive line play?
Another cause for concern. Apparently, Miles Brennan, part of what led to Miles Brennan's struggles was he didn't have a lot of time. He apparently did get a tackle on Braden Fajoco after a good 40-yard fumble return, so I guess that's something. Apparently the offensive line still has some work to do. LSU's pass rush looks to be a lot better than it was last year, so I guess we can give them that. But that being said, it's the SEC. There's a lot of great pass rushes. They can't really they're going to have to do something up there to get Joe Burrow some time. They've kind of set up the offense to get the ball out of Burrow's hands quickly, but it's concerning that the defense was able to dominate that much in the first practice. That said, it's just one scrimmage. They've got two more. Yeah. They got 3 weeks to get their ducks in a row. So it's not, definitely not, ring the alarm bells yet, but just something to keep an eye on.
It's early, but I think the second scrimmage set for this Saturday is the most critical scrimmage because after that they kind of tone things down a little bit. So who does participate and who doesn't will tell us an awful lot, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think so too, and especially I think at a certain point they're not going to be able to afford to let these older guys with minor injuries to just kind of sit out anymore. At some point they're going to have to start getting ready for game day and. So yeah, I'm with you. I think week two is probably scrimmage number two is probably the big one. I'm with you. A week ahead of game time, I don't see that going to be. No. I don't see that being a very live scrimmage. I see that being more of walkthroughs, getting things ready. So I'm with you. I think this upcoming scrimmage is gonna. I mean, obviously we can't see it, but based on what Coach O tells us, I think it's gonna say a lot about where the Tigers are at and how ready they are for their first contest against Georgia Southern.
I'm with you. Tyler Nunez of Tiger Rag joining us here on the Jordy Helpert Show. He said it in spring. He said it in the summer. Now he's saying it in the fall. Two freshmen, Derek Stingley, Apu Aika. Well, he's raved about them.
Yeah, and both of them are going to get plenty of playing time. Derek Stingley pretty much has the second cornerback spot behind Christian Fulton locked up. Or across from Christian Fulton, rather, and Apu Aika, he's in the midst of a battle for starting nose tackle. But even if he doesn't get it, I mean, nose tackle is a position that, I mean, both of those guys are going to have to play significant minutes for the Tigers this year if they want to have any success on that pass rush. So, I think that, both of them have apparently improved leaps and bounds from arriving on campus. And I think that goes to show you the benefits of these guys showing up on campus in January instead of over the summer. I think that gives these guys a big, leap forward whenever you get to practice and work out with, SEC-caliber athletes. I think that, an extra 6 months goes a really long way.
I'm with you. Apu Ika has got to be making Tyler Shelvin better, right? Competition brings out the best, so I would think that Shelvin's kind of stepped up his game as well.
I think so, too. And Shelvin's a guy who showed some promise last year when he was on the field, obviously.
Yeah.
He didn't have the he wasn't at a weight that Ed Orgeron was very happy with, and I think that he worked on that over the summer. Both of these guys are weighing in around 350 pounds right now, which is, I think, where Ed Orgeron wants his nose tackles. And I think that, I think the competition's been great for Tyler Shelvin. He's still getting the number one reps right now. I predict that he'll probably be the starter on day one just because he has game experience. But, having a guy who's pushing you like that, especially at a position where you normally need at least two guys, that can't hurt.
Tyler, with Grant Delpit out and Christian Fulton out, did Coach O single out any players in the secondary? I mean, you got to have depth there. You got to have a lot of people there. Anybody rising up to the occasion and with the opportunity presented?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, especially at cornerback. They have a lot of freshmen there. So you've got guys like Cordell Flyd and Ra'Darius Jones. I think that from what I understand, they're improving. And they're showing a lot of promise, so that's good. As far as Grant Delpit, it's kind of fluid. We were actually talking about this after player interviews. There's no one guy replacing Grant Delpit because he plays such a wide array of roles on that defense. It's kind of whoever is in the position where he would normally be on that play, that's who it is. And so that's another benefit of having a guy like Grant Delpit who can do as much as he can is they kind of share the responsibility of filling that hole. So you got guys like Kerry Vincent who can play cornerback or safety. You've got obviously Jacoby Stevens is a guy who can do a multitude of things, and he has his own kind of fluid role. I think that whoever is, on a particular play, it might be Kalevon Chaisson, who's out right now, but edge rusher who can get to the quarterback. So that's just a benefit of having a guy like Grant Delpit is he even when he's off the floor, he leaves a big hole, but it's able to be filled by a multitude of guys doing a multitude of tasks.
Right. It's funny you mention that because ESPN listed their 50 best college football players for 2019. The defense dominated in scrimmage number one without having the fourth-ranked player in the country in Grant Delpit, the 32nd-ranked player in the country in Christian Fulton, and the 36th-ranked player in the country, Kalevon Chaisson. My goodness, if those all they all come back healthy with the improvement on the defensive line, if that continues, this could be Dave Aranda's best defense since he's been here.
Yeah, he has to be like a kid in a candy store with all these guys, right? Like, he can basically, we're talking about a guy who has schemes on schemes on schemes, right? And he just has this multitude of guys who can play multiple positions. It seems like this defense, it has been built for him, right? He's been here for 4 years now. This is his class. And I think that he has... They've done such a good job of building a defense that he can just play with. And that's why they pay him the big bucks, right?
All right, no question. Tyler Nunez, they pay him the big bucks over there at Tiger Egg. Nice cover with Grant Delpit. I was wrong about that one, but he's deserving of that. Bow tie, looking very, very dapper. When you talk to the players today, what kind of it's a grind. It's the heat index is up there, man. It's blazing. It's brutal. What's their mindset? What are they saying?
They seem amped up and fired up. There's definitely no fatigue yet at this point. At least, and if there is, they're not showing it. I guess you could say there's fatigue in the sense that there's a lot of players who aren't playing right now with minor injuries, but outside of that, whenever they're talking to us, they seem ready to go out there and compete. They're all competing for their spots, especially, at linebacker, there's just so many guys, and even safety. There's just so many guys with potential to play who could play, who would be starting on, 95% of other FBS teams. I think that these guys are going out there, they're competing, they're just trying to earn their spot. And if the heat's going to get in your way, I don't think you're going to admit it.
Yeah, I think one of the lectures that they got from Coach O was guys, look, we got these sleep pods now. Whenever you're in front of the media, don't complain about fatigue, all right? You're rested and you're good to go, right? I mean, come on.
And they love that place too. We were talking to Michael Divinity about it. He's over the moon about the facilities. And I mean, why wouldn't you? We talked at length about that walkthrough room that they have with the simulated defense or a simulated offense, and where they can just basically line up. Apparently, Dave Aranda has them in there every day, working on schemes and going up against different offensive schemes. So I think, it's tough to complain if you're an LSU Tiger right now.
I gotcha. We'll let you go on this one. How did my boy Cade York do? How was the punt kicking game?
Apparently, Cade York was phenomenal. He kicked 8 for 10, from what I understand, which isn't perfect, but still pretty good. And he booted a 51-yarder as well. So that's, comforting. Those aren't quite Cole Tracy numbers, but they're pretty dang good. And we don't know how, which ones he missed and how far away they were. But I got to say, 8 for 10, first time around, that's promising for a guy who should be here for a few years.
There you go. All right, there's your LSU report. Compliments of Tyler Nunez. And what's their schedule this week? They go every day, or are they taking a day off somewhere in here?
They go every day this week. They practice every day leading up to the scrimmage. I think Friday is just a walkthrough.
Right.
Going into which we will not be privy to. We won't be able to watch that, obviously. And then their next day off will be Sunday after their scrimmage.
Okay. Well, we'll have you on back after that to get the lowdown. But thank you as always, my friend, and keep up the terrific work at Tiger Rag. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Jordy.
All right, buddy. That's Tyler Nunez of Tiger Rag with the very latest on LSU. Look, Derek Stingley, two interceptions. He also, the punt return game is going to be better. The kickoff return game is going to be better. This defense could be scary good if all the components remain healthy. But it's still the question marks on the offensive side. Can the offensive line do the job? Can they do it? Look, we talk about all these running backs and all. Davis Price and John Emery, they didn't do anything. The defense held them down. No place to run, no place to go. So the offensive line going into camp was the biggest concern. After one scrimmage, it's still the biggest concern. We'll be back. We'll get a Raging Cajun report when we return. The Jordy Helper Show, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you're locked into the Jordy Helper Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com. And on the free mobile app.
All right, we welcome you back. 51 minutes after the hour. ShopRite Tobacco Plus discount outlets. I tell you every day, there are so many because they're so good and people demand them because they have great prices on every item you could ever imagine. There's about 62 of them in southern and central Louisiana. Cleanest restrooms. Everything under the sun inside the building, including hot breakfasts, hot lunch, hot dinners. They've got everything at ShopRite and Tobacco Plus discount outlets. If you can't shop right at ShopRite, man, you just can't shop right at all. The Raging Cajun quarterback room got a little bit more crowded this weekend with the news from the NCAA that Braden Hawkins is eligible immediately and will have 4 years of eligibility remaining. His waiver got approved. They anticipated this. He came over this summer, did a little 7-on-7 work. So this is good. Hawkins is currently in the battle for the number 3 quarterback spot, along with true freshman Chandler Fields and Clifton McDowell. So he'll get his opportunities, and we'll see what happens. Javiah Magalai is the clear-cut backup to Levi Lewis at this point. He's been taking all the number 2 reps throughout the summer and so far in the fall camp practices. So this is a kid, 6'3", 221, who originally signed with Texas El Paso in February of 2018. He comes from Myers Park High in Charlotte, North Carolina. Before the Miners even began August camp, however, Hawkins had transferred to Maryland as a blue shirt. But before that school year ended, Hawkins transferred to Northwest Mississippi Community College. Instead of waiting to decide, Hawkins decided in May to not only commit to the Cajuns, but also enroll in school in Lafayette right away. Holy cow, he has been everywhere. Let's hope that he has found his roots in raging Cajun land and he sticks around along that way. The Cajuns had a scrimmage themselves over the weekend. And Clint Domain joins us. He is our Raging Cajun update reporter to give us kind of a recap of what he has heard. Because again, you can't watch anything, but he can certainly he's got his sources. And so, Clint, what did you hear from Billy Napier about the Raging Cajuns?
Oh, there's a lot to kind of take away from the first scrimmage for the Cajuns. Obviously, I think the biggest thing heading into this camp is how Levi Lewis looks. And according to Billy Napier, Levi Lewis looks really good. He apparently, in that first scrimmage, clocked in at a QB rating of 150. That's definitely a huge step in the right direction for him. But he did mention that the quarterback group as a whole just needs to do a better job of holding on to the football. Levi had one interception. He didn't like all that much. But again, the quarterbacks definitely still looked pretty darn good.
Okay. Injuries. How, you know, we talk about all these teams across the country with valuable players that aren't able to go. What's the health of the Raging Cajuns these days?
Oh, they've been quite healthy. I think one of the biggest things for them has been dealing with a lot of the concussion protocol issues. One of their big players, Brian Smith Jr., who wound up shining in the spring game a while back, he's going to be returning from concussion protocol, I believe, either if not today, it'll be later on this week. He won't be too far off from returning to regular action. I think outside of that, you had a couple of guys with a pulled hamstring. Nothing significant, thankfully. Knock on wood, yeah. That stays that way.
I talked about how the punt game and the return game for LSU is going to be significantly better with Derek Stingley Jr. I hear there's a long list of Raging Cajuns trying to battle to become that return specialist. Any hayway made after the preseason inter-squad scrimmage number one?
No real mention of it from Billy Napier, actually, on Monday. He didn't really talk much about the special teams aspect of things. It was more about, obviously, your offensive side of the football and dealing with a lot of the defensive players who have stepped up the most. You mentioned the secondary as well as being a big part of that with Michael Jacquet. That's the one thing I've taken away from all this, Jordy, throughout fall camp was Michael Jacquet is his name now. Now it's not Michael Jacquet, it's Jacquet.
Jacquet.
Which has thrown everybody off, in the last, couple months.
Ed Orgeron said the defense dominated in LSU's first scrimmage. What did Napier say about their first scrimmage? Who won the day?
Napier mentioned a lot of different players kind of dominated the day. He didn't give this was who wound up coming out on top. And we recently in the last couple of last half hour actually got the in-depth stats. Let me pull that up for you right now, Jordy. But honestly, I'd say based off of what Napier did say about him, Levi Lewis's performance, I'd say the offense got the better of him. And just looking at him, he went 229 yards, two touchdowns, and two interceptions. Just on the offensive side of the ball, Jordy, it looked like they were controlling things in scrimmage numero uno.
Okay. Well, good. If Levi Lewis has a big year, because look, everybody's going to say, prove it to me, because we got to put our emphasis on stopping the running game. If Levi Lewis can do his thing and put up some numbers, defense has to honor that. That opens up the running game. This could be a high powered offense if the quarterback plays well. That's hour number one. Hour number two straight ahead. The Jordy Helfrich Show, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. Come on back, everybody.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pulled off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans.
Streaming live on the 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 103.7thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won.
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
Hour number two of two, and away we go. Great to be with you as teams are settling in. They've got a NFL teams have gotten a look at themselves for the first time. They can see who can and who can't. And we've got some football scrimmages, lots of players injured. All the coaches want to do is put them in bubble wrap, their stars, put them in bubble wrap and make sure they're there for 12 Saturdays and beyond. That's all they care about. Plus, there was an historic upset in Major League Baseball. The Orioles upset the Houston Astros. So we'll find out about all that and more as we take a walk around our the daily sports water cooler. So, CD, hit that button, please.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
All right, CD, good afternoon. An astronomical upset over the Astros were the Baltimore Orioles, the biggest upset of the 2019 MLB season. Why? Why such a big upset?
Well, I think it has to do, Jordy, with a lot of it because of the fact that Vegas put the odds. I remember seeing this. I believe it was at minus 450, minus 500, somewhere along those lines for the series finale yesterday, Jordy, between the Orioles and the Astros. A lot of that had to do also with the fact that the Astros the night before scored 23 yeah. runs. Yordan Alvarez hits three home runs, including a grand salami. I believe it was him and one other player did something that had never been done in MLB history, and that was both rookies hitting home runs. So all the way around, Jordy, it was just absolute yeah. dominance. And then you saw kind of the bottom fall out just a little bit in the series finale. A walk-off home run, Rio Ruiz, a lot of redemption for him too, because I don't know if you caught any of that, Jordy. You saw an inside-the-park home run in Camden Yards, which doesn't happen all that often. But you also
like a little league, yeah.
You,
yeah.
You saw the play?
I saw it, a little leaguer play.
Oh, yeah.
It's amazing. So, yeah, the Orioles were listed as a plus 420 underdogs by some sports books. You mentioned the 23-3 route on Saturday. You know, Justin Verlander, their ace, was starting for the Astros the next game. And so good for the Orioles for, I guess, for the biggest upset in Major League Baseball this season. All right, here we go.
The only highlight of their 2019 campaign, Jordy, they are probably one of the worst exactly. teams in baseball. And honestly, I think the 2013 Astros could beat the 2019 Baltimore Ooh. Orioles because those are wow. some really bad teams. But, of course, Jordy, I think we need to kind of open up this edition of Hot Topics with what's causing all this involving Antonio Brown. And this kind of came out yesterday. On Friday, we were talking about this with his yeah. helmet-related threat of not playing football again and also the whole cryotherapy thing. And that he's an absolute mess. But the NFL has responded saying that there could be legal ramifications and the wide receiver could possibly be in breach of contract. Jordy, do you think he winds up playing in the league now?
Antonio Brown is not going to give up 30 plus million guaranteed money. He's gonna play. You know what this is? This is a guy, a veteran, who doesn't want to go to practice for training camp. And number two, I firmly believe that this is intentional by the Raiders because it's taking away from everything else on the team and all the bad qualities that this team has. They're going to be a dumpster fire. I'm telling you, they're not going to be very good at all. Nobody's talking about the rest of the team. All the focus is on Antonio Brown, and I promise you, he's not giving up $32 million in guaranteed money. He's going to play football. Tom Brady doesn't like the helmet either, but Tom Brady's playing football. And he said, don't read anything into the fact that I'm selling a house. That has nothing to do with anything. Or the fact that my contract expires after this season. Don't read into it. Well, we can read into it a little bit. But Antonio Brown, he's going to be playing football. I promise you.
I'm with that statement as well, Jordy. But, of course, we got a lot more to talk about involving the world of basketball. One thing that popped up earlier in the week, last week, Jordy, was about the Rich Paul rule. Got a lot, and I mean a lot, of just scorched earth hate. And the NCAA definitely, I'd say this is an all-time backpedal, Jordy. They backpedaled so far back now, the Rich Paul rule has been amended amidst all this blowback. So now the Rich Paul rule is no more in record time.
The NCAA amended the controversial agent certification requirements. A bachelor degree is no longer required to represent players testing the process as long as the agent is certified by the National Basketball Players Association. So, you know, that we said that when it first popped up, that there's no way on God's green earth that's going to last. They're going to change it, and the NCAA did, and so now it's a moot point, and we move on.
It's time to
the
move
on. The power of LeBron. The power of LeBron.
The power of LeBron. You are pretty much dead on with that, Jordy. But, of course, I think we also need to talk about the power of Zion. You mentioned it at the beginning of the program, Jordy. How many primetime games are going to be on tap?
30.
That's insane, Jordy.
30.
That's almost half of your games are going to be nationally televised. That is amazing, Jordy.
And I'm sorry. It's no offense, Drew Holiday, and no offense, Lonzo Ball, and no offense, Brandon Ingram. There's only one reason for it, and that's because of Zion Williamson. So the marketability, the appeal, the Q factor of this kid is off the charts. Good for them. Good for the city. Good for the team. That's good. Good. I mean, that's great.
It is
that's a lot of games, though. That's a lot.
It's amazing, Jordy. 30 of your 82 games are going to be on national TV. That's incredible. But it makes sense, Jordy, especially when you look at some of those matchups, especially we talked about it a couple weeks ago, but we got to bring it up again, Jordy. The day before Thanksgiving, November 27th, it's going to be fantastic because you got Kyrie returning to Boston, and then you got AD's return and also LeBron taking on the number one pick of the Pels, Zion Williamson. That's probably one of the best days in recent memory for basketball fans everywhere.
That's a good one, and don't forget the Pels are going to be playing on Christmas Day, so they don't. That's basically when a lot of people think the NBA season starts. That's when they really start to tune in and watch, and to have the Pelicans on Christmas Day says an awful lot as well. So Zion, man, and look, they took the rookie photos, and for all those people that thought, man, he looked out of shape, whatever the training staff has done. Has worked. He looked thin, slim, trim. He had his Jordans on, wearing that red Pelicans uni. Looked really good. So can't wait to see him play. Looking forward to it.
The man looks absolutely fantastic, Jordy. And what's really cool is all the photos. There's one in particular that is my wallpaper now, Jordy, of Zion Williamson. It's a little bit more like faded back, like the background's all black, and it's him going for a dunk, and I'm like, oh, it's a masterpiece of a photo, Jordy. I'd recommend you check that out. But of course, Jordy, while we're talking about the 2020 season for NBA basketball, 2019-2020, Major League Baseball wasting a little time doing the same thing as well, getting it done early. But mind you, Jordy, they bumped their season up even earlier. March the 26th. Is when the regular season is going to start, Jordy. The earliest it's ever started outside of, obviously, those international games that don't really matter, like we saw with the Seattle Mariners. But, Jordy, is March 26th too early for baseball?
It's going to be cold in some of those northern cities, isn't it? I mean, it's that's going to be brutal in many regards. I hope they schedule to come down south or to go out to the West Coast where it's a little bit warmer, but look, it all comes with television. It all comes with how can we get the most bang for our buck so we can get the most advertising revenue we can, because we understand when the football season starts, our audience fades into the woodwork until it's time for the playoffs, and then we figure it out. But there's a big stretch there where football takes over, so they're trying to do whatever they can, and I don't fault them for it. You know, they'll start after March Madness or during March Madness, I guess, and that's a wash. And then they'll try and gain some steam from there. But it's a long season. I don't know how they do it, but it's going to be cold in Boston. It's going to be cold in New York. It's going to be cold in Toronto.
Yep.
But that's got to do something. So good for them for trying.
It reminds me, Jordy, you know, before we kind of wrap up Hot Topics, it reminds me of the first game that we were ever supposed to air here of the Astros on 103.7 The Game. It was in New York, Jordy. The game got canceled because of snow.
Snow. That's right.
And because of snow, I think it was like April like 2nd or 3rd, Jordy. Like the Monday after, the first Monday baseball game. And it gets canceled. The first game we were so excited, getting ready, pumping up the Astros coming on 103.7 The Game, returning to the state of Louisiana, more in a radio aspect, and then it gets canceled due to weather. You got to be kidding me.
Yeah. I mean, look, I've been up in those parts of the world when it's March and basketball season in the NBA, and I'm telling you, it's cold. So. Just schedule right. Take your road trips. Come on down to Atlanta. Come on down to Miami. Go to L.A. You know, go to San Diego. All those places. Go to Arizona, and stay away from the north. Get a lot of your road games in early. All right. Do you remember the slogan of the Dome Patrol CD? You remember them?
I don't quite remember that, Jordy. I was a little bit young at that point in my life.
You were young.
Yes.
Oh, four phenomenal players at linebacker that. Under the Jim Mora regime, they were something. Vaughn Johnson and company, Ricky Jackson, the late Sam Mills, and our next guest, Pat Swilling, all inducted into the Greater New Orleans Sports Hall of Fame. The latest, Pat Swilling, on Saturday, he joins us next to talk about the Dome Patrol. Come on, baby. They were awesome. We'll have that next here. Brought to you by Cajun Chef Hot Sauce, the best hot sauce on the planet. The B-Art family, for nearly 90 years, putting out the same great product, among the many products that they put out there to appease your appetite. But their hot sauce, man, do yourself a flavor. Bring a small bottle with you wherever you go, because everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. 10 good minutes. With the Dome Patrol's Pat Swilling next.
Taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Holtberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
Oh, all you New Orleans Saints fans, you're in for a treat. Back in 1986 to 1992, he roamed the Superdome with his teammates. They comprised the famed Dome Patrol. Oh, my goodness. Ricky Jackson, the great Sam Mills, Vaughn Johnson, and our guest, the legendary Pat Swilling, who's kind enough to join us a couple of days after he was inducted into the All-State Sugar Bowl Greater New Orleans Sports Hall of Fame. Pat, thank you for the time, and congratulations, sir.
Thanks a lot. Thank you very much.
You know, you've been in the Saints Hall of Fame, the Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame, the College Football Hall of Fame. What does this Hall of Fame mean to you?
You know, it really means a lot because, you know, I live here in this community. I work in this community. I raised my family in the community. You know, it really meant a lot to me and my family and my wife, and just because, you know, we're here every day. We're in this community. We know everyone, and any time that you can be put into a Hall of Fame where you live, you know, all day to day, everywhere I go, people have been congratulating me, and it's been fun. It's been a fun day for me.
107.5 career sacks. You had 17 sacks in the league in 1991. Man, you were the NFL Defensive Player of the Year. What was that season like for you?
Yeah, I tell you, it was great. And also, I got married, and I had my baby boy, Patrick, that same year. So, yeah, as you can tell, I had a great time. But it was a great year. And, you know, a lot of times those honors, you know, a lot of times you get the accolade. But, you know, me, Ricky, Sam, Vaughn, and that whole group, you know, we all played together. And it was one of those honors that was really meant. To me, it was more of a team honor, or even a team honor, than just me. And you know, I played well, had a great year. But also there were things going on around me that those guys really, really gave me the opportunity where I could just cut loose and go play and do some things. And but it really was a great year in my career.
I remember watching you in college when you were at Georgia Tech. I remember seeing you against North Carolina State. I think you had 7 sacks. That's an NCAA record in one game. I mean, that must have been fun.
It was fun. You know, and I'll tell everyone about that record. I missed 2 sacks. I should have had 9, to be honest with you. But
oh, my gosh.
And I was going against Joe Melichek. Joe Melichek was up there. He was drafted in maybe 2nd or 3rd round that year and played for North Carolina State. So I was really hyped for that game and just had a tremendous game. And, you know, I still hold that record. And I keep telling my boys at Georgia Tech, I don't know if anyone's going to break that one. But, you know, records are made to be broken.
We shall see. Pat Swilling, kind enough to join us. Tell me the story behind the Dome Patrol. Who came up with that? And when you first heard it, what did you think?
Well, you know, Sam Mills was kind of behind it. He had Costco's, which that was a company out of Seattle who wanted to do the poster of us. And they called us, and we were pondering some names, and the Dome Patrol came up. And, you know, Richie kind of looked at me and looked at Sam and said, let's do it. So we shot that video, man. And, I mean, I'm sorry, that poster. And took off, man. I'll tell you what, people still ask me for that poster.
Yes. I mean, that's legendary. Did you have any – when did you know that you four together were going to do something special?
Well, you know, it was kind of funny. You know, I was drafted there in 86, and Ricky was there, and I was excited about, you know, us teaming up as outside linebackers. I still had a lot to learn, and lo and behold, the USFL folded. So we had the rights to the territory for Sam and Vaughn. So there's a bus that came in with about 25 players, and Sam and Vaughn was on it. And I knew Vaughn. I didn't know Sam, and I knew Vaughn. And next thing we know, man, we out there, and you know, people, and Vaughn's knocking people's head off, and Sam's 5'9" and playing like he's 6'3", 260 pounds. And, you know, people just start talking about us, and it just took off, man. It really did.
It's exciting times. You guys kind of set the foundation for what now is the most historic run that this franchise has had under Sean Payton, Drew Brees, and company. That's got to make you feel good to see where this organization is now. Because believe me, as you know, it hadn't always been like this.
No, it has. No, it has. And, you know, I remember those years. And, you know, I can also remember when we got here and then talking to Ricky and Ricky Jackson and all the years and what they've suffered through. And, you know, I'm thinking to myself, man, we're not going to do that. And Sam and Vaughn, we all think, and we're going to change this thing. And, you know, Coach Moore also changed the culture, man. We did things differently. He expected things to be done right all the time. We practiced hard. We played hard. You know, we were changing things, and we played in 4 playoffs and didn't win a game, but we started it, and that's why we looked at it. We started it, and it's great to go watch Drew Brees and Coach Payton and all those guys come out and watch those guys play and know that, you know, we're a part of getting this thing going in the right direction.
Pat Swilling, kind enough to join us, newest inductee into the Greater New Orleans Sports Hall of Fame. Ed Reed was another one that was there. Jim Robarts, longtime basketball coach. Mr. Truax, a former Tiger and Saint, is in it as well. But I think once a Saint, always a Saint. I don't think you get it in a whole bunch of other cities. But I bet as you walk around, you don't have a moment's peace. I would imagine people still come up to you. And you probably got to tell the same story again and again and again. But, hey, it beats the alternative, right?
It definitely does. And, you know, people love us all over the state. But here in New Orleans, I often tell people, man, I really feel like I'm still playing. They treat me that way because they love us so much. And they have fond memories of what we've done and our careers. And, you know, it's not a day go by that someone don't holler, Pat's willing to save or Dome Patrol or something. So, you know, it's a wonderful thing. You know, I tell my wife sometimes, you know, you think maybe you wish you could just walk around and no one say anything. But, you know, this is a great community. And, you know, I love them and they love us back, man. It's been wonderful.
All right, Pat, tell me the truth now. I've always been a believer that veterans during exhibition, preseason games, whatever you want to call it, they just don't care. They just want to get through it, and they just want to stay healthy and be ready for when it counts. So all Saints fans that are worried about what happened against Minnesota, tell them to calm down, right?
Exactly, because I'm telling them, think about last year, same thing. They played terrible the first game, and it got better, but hey, man, I'm not going to lie to you. It's boring for us. It's tough for us. I mean, veteran guys don't want to play in those four games. You're just trying your best to get to the regular season, and that's no different. I mean, it was no different the other day. It won't probably be any difference for the next, you know, game or two. You know, these guys are trying to get ready for that, those 16 games.
What was it like in that Superdome when that sold-out crowd would start screaming, Dome Patrol, Dome Patrol? I was one of them, man. That was electrifying.
And loud. I tell you, it was loud. And, you know, one of the best venues, I think, to ever play any professional sport in, but especially football. I mean, if you couldn't get up to play, man, on Sunday afternoon for our crowds, you shouldn't be in a game. And, you know, it made it easy for us, and people couldn't hear us. It made it easy for me to come off that corner, me and Ricky Jackson. But, you know, it was a wonderful time. And I'll say something, too. I never felt the same. You know, the Raider fans were great. Don't get me wrong. Raider fans are great. I played there 4 years. But the Superdome is a loud, loud dome. And I tell you what, you have a dome field advantage there.
No question. Pat, congratulations on the induction into the Grand Orleans Sports Hall of Fame. Just another plaque for the many plaques that you've received. Very deserving. And now the group is all back together again. And that's got to be sweet.
It is sweet. That's what I said the other day. We're now all in, and it's a great thing.
I appreciate the time, my friend, and congratulations. All the best to your family. I wish your boys had come to Tiger Town, but, hey, they're a rambling wreck. They followed Dad's footsteps. So what do you do, right? What do you do?
Exactly. I'm proud of them. They're doing well.
All right, buddy. You take care. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. Okay, bye-bye.
All right, we'll take a quick time out here. Pat Swilling of the Dome Patrol will be back with more here on the Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
National Series. The season will also feature an April series between the Mets and
Here's three pieces of advice to live by. Never play cards with a guy whose last name is a state. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Hey, we welcome you back. It's 33 minutes after the hour. John Bell Edwards, our governor, attended Saints practice today, and he said that Louisiana officials and the Saints are working on a plan to keep New Orleans Saints in the state for another 30 years. He said, I don't think there's a better place in the world for the Saints. The big linchpin is this is a transformative $450 million renovation of the Superdome. It's going to be the most elaborate and expensive overhaul of the iconic stadium in its 44-year history. So the project is the linchpin to a long-term agreement between the state and the team whose existing lease agreement expires in 2025. That's what's happening off the field. Let's find out what's been happening on the field. Our good friend from Canal Street Chronicles, Mr. Bob Rose, is kind enough to join us. Robert, how are you, sir?
I'm really good, Jordy. How about yourself?
I'm doing terrific. So, let's see. We see that Rishard Matthews, a day after leaving the Saints, retires from the NFL. He was like an emotional wreck, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. You and I have both talked to a number of former players. I've been fortunate enough to talk to a number of former players.
Right.
And a lot of them will usually say, you know, when the end is here, you know it, but it's still tough to accept. And I think that that's kind of what, you know, this young man, Richard was going through. He was having an okay camp, from different people that I talked to, but he didn't get a lot of reps in the game Friday night, which I took note of. And then the news that broke on Saturday morning, even before he announced his retirement, I kind of, you know, shook my head to myself and I said, he's probably going to hang it up. Retirement announcement didn't come as any great surprise. I hope that's all it is. I hope that that's, he just decided, okay, I'm going to call it a career. And, obviously we wish him the best of luck.
Absolutely. All right, to the game itself. Teddy Bridgewater, what did you think?
I thought Teddy looked sharp. His footwork was pretty good. He seems to have decent command of the offense itself, and those players definitely respect him in the huddle. I would like to personally see him go downfield a little bit more. If he throws a pick or two, it is preseason, so it's certainly not the end of the world. We know that Teddy can check it down, and then he has good vision over the short and sometimes even intermediate routes. I would like to see more of a downfield game from him, but his pass protection, once the backup linemen started coming into the game, his pass protection didn't do him a whole lot of favors either.
Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles. Let's talk about the wide receiver position. Who stood out? Who did anybody climb the ladder? Did anybody slip down the ladder a little bit?
I think as far as climbing the ladder, two names really stood out to me. Cyril Grayson, and we know he has great speed, Olympic track caliber speed, and he had been performing pretty well in camp, but I love what he did in the game. That sideline catch he made along the right, I believe it was the right sideline. Mm-hmm. It just showed tremendous hands, footwork, and concentration. And then later on in the game, he impressed me with his willingness and ability to get downfield and block when someone else had the ball. And Pete Carmichael and Sean Payton take notice of that kind of thing. So I think that this young man really helped himself out in making a case for a roster spot. And another guy that I thought had a good game was Lil Jordan Humphrey, who has not stood out in practice whatsoever. He's had a couple of rough outings, as a matter of fact. But the kind of the book on him coming out is that, not so much that he dogged it in practice at Texas, but he's just one of those players that shine brightest when the light and when the big lights go on. And he certainly showed us that on Friday evening. It shows for his size. He showed good elusiveness in the open field and good fight and ball awareness after the catch. So I'd like to see a lot more from Humphrey in practice and certainly in the upcoming games. But that receiver position, I'll tell you what, for the one to two spots that are available, I see it being really five guys. That is Grayson, Humphrey. Yeah. Emmanuel Butler, you and I have talked about and glowed about before. He missed the game on Friday with an injury, but he's back at practice doing his same old thing. And Simi Cobb had himself a pretty good game, too. He showed some decent set. He only had one catch, but he showed some nice separation and good awareness to come back to the football when Taysom Hill was in trouble a couple of times. And that's something that not a lot of young receivers do well, is come back to the football. So Cobb kind of impressed me with that. I'm really going to be interested in seeing how this position shakes out in the upcoming weeks.
I'm with you. I'm with you, Bob. And it is amazing how Emmanuel Butler is now 100%. I think he stood on the sidelines and went, I got to get my butt back on the field or I'm not going to be here long.
Yeah, that was exactly my thought, too, when watching the game, because we've seen star camp darlings, for lack of a better term, that didn't really perform well in the preseason games themselves. And Coach Payton would choose to keep them around for a season or two if he could. But I got to believe if I'm Emmanuel Butler and I'm sitting on the sideline, I'm thinking to myself the same exact thing that you just said, man. I got to get back out there because this is not going to be an easy roster decision for these coaches.
A lot of veterans, so very few roster spots are available. Let's go through some of the rookies, starting with Eric McCoy. When you watched him, what did you think?
I wasn't really surprised or disappointed by anything that I saw. The Vikings defensive line, especially the first two units of it, is one of the better defensive lines that you're going to find in the league. So I thought that this was a great test for McCoy. But he shows good footwork and nice agility. He is getting really the majority of the starter reps, even in practice. I think that the starting center spot is his to lose at this point. And I think that Peyton plans on sticking with him from now up through the season opener. And he's shown no indication why we should disagree with that coach's decision.
All right. And then a couple of rookies back in the secondary, Saquon Hampton, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. What did you think of their efforts?
Boy, and you and I both know that they have been absolutely, both of them have been absolutely balling out at practice. I like the fact that they got a lot of game reps. Now, they didn't really stand out, but they also didn't play nearly as poorly as some of the other members of the secondary that are facing a bit of an uphill climb to win the job. I think that they're going to show, you know, if they continue to get as many reps as they did on Friday, they're going to continue to get a better feel for not only their own defensive scheme, but the opposing offense and just the speed of the game, which any rookie will tell you is so much more different and faster than what they're used to coming out of college. I haven't changed my tune on either Saquon Hampton or Chauncey Gardner-Johnson. I am still really excited to see what they're going to do in the secondary. And I, you know, both of them have great athleticism on the back end at this point, or at this stage, rather. It's just a matter for them getting a feel for opposing offenses and what Dennis Allen and secondary coach Aaron Glenn, what kind of schemes that they're throwing at them.
Here's Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles. The Saints will take tomorrow off, then they'll head to the West Coast on Wednesday for some joint practices with the Chargers. That would be a great test, I would think. So in summation, you know, what was your biggest takeaway from the first preseason game, if anything?
Well, we already mentioned the competition at the receiver spot. And I'll be honest with you, it's deeper than what I thought it would be once game action started. Okay. Now it is only one preseason game, but all of these guys made me kind of sit up in my chair and take notice. I'm really anxious to see what they are going to do. The offensive tackle depth scares me a lot. Ulrich John, unfortunately for him, went down with an injury that caused the team to place him on IR. But even before that, he was probably the most impressive of a very unimpressive bunch against the Vikings. And, you know, coming into the offseason, I think you and I even spoke about it, the offensive tackle depth behind Ryan Ramczyk and Teron Armstead did scare me a little bit. And now I'm a little bit more concerned after watching that performance on Friday night. Defensively, I know a lot of Saints fans are disappointed at what, you know, the way New Orleans performed defensively, especially against the run game. I expect that this unit is going to shore things up and solidify themselves as we get closer to the season opener against Houston. At this point, Cam Jordan, I don't think Cam played at all, or if he did, it was very, very little. Demaryius Davis, Alex Anzalone, same thing. At this stage, I want to see the same things that the coaches are looking at. I want to see how deep this defensive unit really is. And the only thing that concerned me also on that side of the ball was gap containment and backside responsibilities. A lot of those guys had some blown assignments that caused broken big plays for Minnesota. Again, I'm not gonna be ready to take a bridge over that. The defensive coaches are gonna get this shored up as they go along, and obviously this is a very young and up and coming defensive unit. Again, I just want to see how deep they are. I like the fact that they gave so many reps to the backups, and I hope that that actually continues, especially against a true test in the scrimmages and subsequent preseason game against the Chargers, who are one of the better teams in the AFC.
No question. Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles. A couple of new players on the practice field today, fullback Shane Smith and an offensive lineman by the name of Chris Clark. I guess now's the time to experiment, right, and see if maybe some of these guys are better than what you've got.
Yeah, absolutely. In the fullback position, I don't think Mr. Zach Lyon is sweating bullets as far as his job is concerned. But we know that Sean Payton enjoys stashing running backs and receivers on the practice squad to call up for a rainy day or even as trade bait. So that's where I kind of see that fullback signing. The Chris Clark signing, he's a veteran. I think the last time team he played with is Carolina. But he had if it's the guy I'm thinking of, he logged some time with the Denver Broncos as well, and has some starting experience. And just like we literally just finished talking about, that offensive tackle depth kind of concerns us. And I alluded to that in a piece this afternoon, in the Canal Street Chronicles, that it wouldn't surprise me at all if the team kind of kicked some tires on some veteran linemen as the preseason progressed. And that's kind of what we see out of this. If Clark plays well, he may, he's a viable candidate for a backup job.
Marcus Davenport, he seems to be the player that needs Cam Jordan on the other side to make him better. Without Cam Jordan, Marcus not as good as maybe we thought he was. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, and I don't know if I'm ready to take on that philosophy quite yet. Davenport received a lot of double and even some triple teams without Cam on the other side, and although Trey Hendrickson played well, and so did Mario Edwards Jr., by the way, neither of those guys are Cam. If Cam Jordan is not on the field and Marcus Davenport is, you better believe if I'm the opposing offensive coordinator, I'm focusing my entire blocking scheme on Davenport. It disappoints me a little bit that he hasn't, up to this point, been able to defeat double teams consistently. But again, this is what preseason and practices are for. Right. I'd like to see this young man progress. He showed us some nice potential last year, and he does need to take this next step forward for this defense to be better. But by all means, and Cam, and I'm knocking on wood as I say this, Cam is a virtual Iron Man on the defensive side of the football. He's only missed one game throughout his career. As long as Cam is on the field, Cam makes that entire defense better, and certainly Davenport is going to be the primary beneficiary of that. And he can, as long as Jordan is in the lineup, Davenport can afford to progress a little bit more slowly. A lot of us want him to step on his stepdad accelerator to the floor as far as being all-pro worthy right now. Sometimes it takes a season or two, because remember, Marcus didn't play major college football. At the SEC, ACC, Big Ten level, it came from a smaller program. And sometimes for players, the progression can be the progression curve can be a little bit wider with them. Now I'm like you. I did take notice that he didn't do anything overly spectacular on Friday night, and I definitely want to see that change between now and the regular season opener. But I'm not all that worried about the position yet.
Yeah, I think Cam Jordan said it perfectly. He says sometimes Marcus overthinks things. He's just got to pin his ears back and go get it. Instead of thinking this step, that step, this arm move, that arm move, just go get the football. And I think if he reacts rather than thinks and then reacts, I think he might be a whole lot better.
Oh, absolutely. And you see and hear that in a lot of different sports, at each level, from JV to varsity high school and high school to college and obviously now college to the professional level. You do tend to overthink things, especially when you're a student of the game. And everything that we heard about Marcus Davenport coming out of college, we were hearing that he studied a lot of film and he just tried to be a sponge and soak in everything that his coaches and other teammates were saying and doing around him. But in the process of doing that, like you just mentioned, you can sort of get lost in the shuffle and not rely on your natural ability. And that's what got him to the level that he is. That's what caused the Saints to trade so much away to move up to get him. So when that light bulb goes off, I still believe he could be an absolute beast in this league.
Bob, I can't thank you enough, man. We'll talk about the next one when the time comes, but keep up the great work and the great writing at Canal Street Chronicles, and it's always a pleasure to have you on, man. Thank you.
Oh, always a pleasure to join you. Thank you so much.
You take care. That's Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles. Some history lessons, some birthday wishes as we wrap up this Monday edition of the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
All the best guests join the Jordy Holtberg Show. If you missed an interview, you can check it out on demand at 1037thegame.com. Now, back to the show.
All right, as we close things up, special thanks to Pat Swilling for coming on. What a player. What a player. It's the 150th anniversary of college football. Sports Illustrated decided to put their heads together to come up with the greatest programs in college football history. All subjective, all debatable. At number 10, they have Oklahoma. It's not what they are now. It's over the course of the history of football. Number 9, Tennessee. Number 8, Penn State. Number 7, Nebraska. Number 6, Notre Dame. Number 5, USC. Number 4, Texas. Number 3, Michigan. Number 2, Ohio State. And I'm sorry to say, number 1 all-time team, according to Sports Illustrated, not Jordy Holtberg, Sports Illustrated, the Alabama Crimson Tide. With that in mind, we time to do our daily history lesson. And it was on this day, August 12th, the year was 1974. A very special day for the New York Yankees as both Mickey Mantle and Whitey Ford became the first teammates to be inducted into the Hall of Fame on the same day. The Mick and Whitey Ford. On this day, August 12th, the year 1974. If today is your birthday, from all of us at 103.7 The Game and everybody involved at Delta Media, we hope you have a fabulous day with great food, presents, cake, ice cream, the whole shebang. You share your day with the likes of 48-year-old tennis legend Pete Sampras. Yes, indeed. And the British heavyweight boxer, happy 31st birthday, Tyson Fury. All right, so, again, we didn't learn much from either the Cajuns, the Tigers, or the Saints. I've said it till I'm blue in the face. When they start keeping score and they have officials on the field, we'll find out, one, who the best players are, and two, if the teams are any good or not. That's when we'll find out. Until then, it just doesn't matter. Just keep them healthy. Special thanks to Tiger Rags Tyler Nunez for joining us today. Pat Swilling, the Hall of Famer, Greater New Orleans Sports Hall of Fame, Louisiana Sports Hall of Fame, Saints Hall of Fame, College Football Hall of Fame. He joined his Dome Patrol members. Ricky Jackson, Sam Mills, Vaughn Johnson, and now Pat Swilling, all in the Greater New Orleans Sports Hall of Fame. I'm telling you, when they were going, they just didn't have an offense. They just didn't. But boy, they had a defense. Those guys were sensational. And for Bob Rose from Canal Street Chronicles. So the Pelicans, the big story, 30 nationally televised games this year. 30. They've never had that many in their lifetime, but they've got it now. So the hype for Zion is legit across the board. Tomorrow, more on all of the football teams that are out there and anything else that's important to you and to yours. So, CD, job well done. I don't know who our guests are going to be tomorrow, but we'll figure it out. We'll figure it out along the way. If it's topical, we'll do our very, very best to get them. So, I got one for you. As we close, mark your calendars on this day because we got a trifecta for you. We really do. We have a really good trifecta. Friday, October 25th, Mavericks at the Pelicans, home opener. Saturday, October 26th, Auburn at LSU. And then Sunday, Cardinals at the Saints, and then Monday, the Warriors at the Pelicans. That's four in a row. Until tomorrow, I'm Jordy Helper. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.